Welcome to Headlines, Halakhic Debate of Current Events, a weekly interactive program on some of the most controversial breaking issues of today. Here now is your host, David Lichtenstein, founder and CEO of the Lightstone Group, and author of Headlines.
Good vach, everybody. Welcome to Headlines, Debate of Current Halakhic Issues. Tonight's topic is the Aguna Crisis. Are there any solutions? Recently, this topic has been in the news as a number of prominent local Rabbanim and Askanim have been arrested trying to save women who were Agunas. To discuss this topic this week, we will have Mareinu Hagoyin Rav David Cohn of Gvul Yavetz. Next week, we will be talking about technology on Shabbos, motion detectors, cameras, etc. Our guest will be Rav Daniel Landa, the Rosh Yeshiva of Aruch Chaim. The following week, we will have Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson, who will be joining us to discuss people who have alternative lifestyles. How do we deal with them? A halachic perspective. Thank you.
If you are enjoying tonight's radio show, please make sure to read David Lichtenstein's important and innovative new book of the same title as this broadcast, Headlines, Halakhic Debate of Current Events, published by OU Press. Embark on a fascinating journey through halakha on some of the most important and controversial breaking issues of the day. Available at your local Jewish booksellers and at Amazon.com.
We're sitting here with Mareinu Harav Hagoyin, Reb David Cohn of Gvul Yavetz. And we're here to talk about a very serious and sad situation that afflicts not only our community, but unfortunately many of the communities in the world today, and that is the refusal of recalcitrant husbands to give gittin to their wives. And seemingly from halacha, even though this happened occasionally, it's become the equivalent of a magefa over the last number of years. And I'd like to ask the Rav, are there any halacha d'ka'etis for these what have become, in effect, agunas?
None that I know of, that we can do the regular halachas of kfiyah that are in Shulchan Aruch, because generally speaking, it's very difficult to go into the sugya of kfiyas haget. The only thing we can try to do is to... As the famous story goes, I can't tell you whether it ever happened, but there are those who tell stories, and they explain how stories are important, that the Seder HaDeiris and the Shagasaya was supposed to have had a debate as to how can one argue with the other. And the Seder HaDeiris said, well, through my work of Sipurim, I'm going to see to it that, like, you're claiming that your sefer is one where you're showing that like Tishtakach Tarem Yisrael, I will bring about that there will not be any reason for Yisrael to want to forget Torah, because they'll have a great cheshik to learn Torah. The only thing I could possibly see is what the RCA has suggested, which is very difficult scientifically to prove that it has accomplished. It makes sense that it does accomplish, that the Baal makes himself his chayvus, that he will go to Bezdin, and that he will pay an enormous amount of money per day for mizonus l'ishto. So his being recalcitrant and going to the Bezdin, at least, will cost him, and it's a regular contract as far as being enforced in the secular courts is concerned, and as a result, at least he'll go to Bezdin and will be able to get a psak Bezdin against him, and then he may, as a result of having this psak Bezdin against him, will feel encouraged, let's put that in quotes, to give a get. That is one of the ways that we can try and work it out. I think a second thing, which is not that much halachic, is public opinion. Many people, there are people that are not influenced by public opinion, but there are many people who are, and public people have to get involved. People have to feel that they can't just say shalom alei nafshi. People have to get involved and feel that the situation is one which could always happen to them. Chalila, it should happen to anyone, but people have to feel that way, and they have to get involved, and even if they're close friends of the husband, they have to hear the other side and encourage this thing, if only for the Chilul Hashem, and I'm not using that word loosely. I know that nowadays they have signs of Issa Chomer that if you don't put the Svarim back into the shelves after you finish learning it, it's a Chilul Hashem and Issa Noirad Miyad Miyad. But this word has been overused, but it really is a Chilul Hashem in the eyes of non-committed Jews, where they, according to them, this is Teiras Chaim, where a woman has to suffer in a marriage that she doesn't want to be a partner to. That's Chilul Hashem. That we know we have a Teiras Chaim, we live with a Teira, and the Rabbeinu Shlaim, as the Mesil Shalom said, Le'nivra Adam El Hisanag Al Hashem, not to be full of pain one's whole life. Is this a Teiras Chaim that a woman has to be tortured this way, that she no longer can have a wife, a life? It's absurd, and people must get involved, that we must have that thing.
So the Rav suggested that the RCA prenuptials then, which are based on the Nesivis, they're based on the Nesivis.
Well, I know that Gedolei Yisrael, I remember it's Rav David Bleich, I think at the inception of when this problem was being dealt with, I believe he was the one who suggested it. I don't know about the various sources that were used. I know Rabbi Zalman Nechamia Goldberg was supposed to have been involved. So we have Gedolei Yisrael put together this document. It's not taking off in the what we would call the Chredishe, Yeshivishe, and Chassidishe community. I don't know why. It's not taking off. They're very hesitant in signing it. But when I'm asked whether they should sign it, I said I can't see any reason why they shouldn't. It's valid, let's put it that way.
In the modern Orthodox world where they use the RCA, they say they have almost no problem of Agunas because of it.
I can't comment on it. I haven't seen any kind of proof that this helped. But if you have a point. If it's not happening and every community does have the problem, then perhaps it's working.
What about Harchakis of Rabbeinu Tam? Would you suggest that we start enforcing Harchakis of Rabbeinu Tam?
See, there are many things that I would be in favor of, but I can't voice any kind of opinion when it's Negea to Klal Yisrael. Even Reb Chaim Eiser Zatzal, who was the recognized Gadol Hador, when it was a question of Shechita Behimim, he wrote letters. The Sri Deyesh has a complete volume about this. When Reb Chaim Eiser wrote letters, he says, I must have other people being maskim with me. I'm not going to give a hayroa, which is Negei Klal Yisrael. One of the great criticisms of these so-called Batei Din who give heterim, we're dealing with Eishasish. Eishasish is something which is a chash mamzeres, which is negeya all of Klal Yisrael. And the question, if it's called Isui HaGet, means it's not a get. That means if this woman gets married, the children will be mamzerim. It's very difficult to accept, even a case of a Besdin, if it's not really a Besdin that's authorized by Klal Yisrael, not three people that got together and said, let's be a Besdin. It's very difficult to accept this because it's Negeya Klal Yisrael. So that's why, in a way, these Batei Din, in quotes, that have been giving all kinds of heterim with Kfiyas Habal, where one can almost, it's transparent that it's Shalei Kedin. It's something which is, I would say, the term Shemu Shemayim also. They are being Mater Eshes Eshlaoma. So if there would be a great Asifa of Rabbonim that are Meirei Hayro, they'd get together, I'm ready to accept whatever the consensus, not when the Rabbonim have their asifa, those Rabbonim who are not Mayayra, and they ask for a vote and they vote. That really has no halachic meaning. That's just good for the press, but it's not halacha. But if Mayayra would get together, Mayayra which are acceptable by many, many Yidden, then I would accept whatever they would hold. All the harchakas, everything. But again, you have to have a shemaya bein achechem. Many a time, a ma'agen has friends, and he's the woman is the quiet one, and the propaganda that he gives forth is such where his friends and his friends spread it, and people accept it. So how could you make harchakas against the person when you don't know what happened in halacha? So it's not easy in a shtetl, even, I don't know about a big city, but in a shtetl, people more or less knew what was going on. So you can have all these ways of trying to coerce. Otherwise, it's very difficult in our world. So people really have to get very much involved and clarify it. Something should be set up where if these people don't want to go to din, at least they could represent the antagonists, and the true story should emerge, and therefore the tzibba should react.
Is there really any reason, though, after a marriage has been irrevocably broken, to be ma'agin and isha? Or is there chakas harbeinu tamar, you know, loy lisa v'lita nimai, loy lamo as benaiter? When a marriage is irrevocably broken, is there any reason? Let's say she was a klafta. Let's say she was mamish hazoi from.
There is a reason. There is a reason. If perhaps, I mean, we can't. We have to be saivul for a bow when the woman keeps the children for herself and doesn't let the father see the children. And there was a case many years ago in Eretz Yisrael. She was an aguna for 18 years, and the Besdin threw their hands up, and they tried to coerce her that she should, so to speak, share the children with the husband. She refused.
So would that be the one exception?
I can understand it, yes. It's hard to think of another exception, but that would be the only one, and only when you feel you can accomplish something. Once it's done and the children are estranged from, and they're grown up and they're estranged, in other words, they've accepted all the things that mother told them about father, and you feel you can't accomplish, then I would say the Baal should give a get, because then it's just revenge.
So you hear many of the women in these, sadly, of these agunas, and they say that the halacha isn't helping them. And how is it possible, drachel darki noyim, that there's no answer halachically?
It's a good question. Well, it's a good question. I don't have an answer. But you see, the problem is this. It's not Judaism. It's not the Torah. It's the achzar. It's the husband who's an achzar. So he's the one who's making a chal Hashem. So people say it's the Torah. The fact that the Torah said that a woman needs a get, and if she doesn't get it, she cannot remarry, that's a Teiras Chaim, and we understand it very well in the psychology of the a woman can only be attached to one husband, even though as far as the Din Torah is concerned, a husband can have many wives before Ravina Gershom, which is not the way Western thought has it. Eastern thought agrees with it. Psychologically, It's not an evil thing. And in fact, there are communities where there are no unmarried women because of that. We can rationalize that quite well. The problem is that the individual Jews are the ones who are Rishayim, not the Torah. So we have to do whatever we can that there shouldn't be Rishayim around, short of killing them. We can't.
Is it possible that maybe, in particular, assuming that the statistics are true, that we're seeming to, you know, is it most in Hasidish and less as you move on, that it comes from a certain, maybe a lack of respect for the women? That we see that the Batei Din won't go to bat for them. Is that possible?
I can't say all Batei Din. There are Batei Din that are fine. You know, it depends on the individual Bezin. Those Batei Din that look at women in a way where they react in the way that you just described. In my eyes, they are not bateidin. Shamaya bein achechem doesn't mean only men. Shamaya bein achechem means the two litigants. They have to be equal in your eyes. It's unfortunate, perhaps, that there are individuals that look that way. This has to be corrected. It's not real. It's not Torahdik.
What is your opinion? The get rule of New York that New York State passed, which says that a judge has the right to divide, take into account one of the partners' recalcitrant attitude towards allowing the other one to remarry, and take that into account when dividing the marital estate. So many Paiskim hold that as a din of kfiya by get based on the Tashbats and the Rishon and Hay.
Rabbi Yoshev and Shlomo Zalman were against it, and I was a participant in a debate in, I believe it was, Shelley Silver's office, and many Rabbanim got together, and I was a participant there, and there was a bon mot. Quote, he said, Rav Shlomo Zalman said, it's not a takone, it's a sakone. And the point that I understood very well, that as a result of this takone, in quotes, there are many husbands who will give a get, albeit they didn't want to. That in itself could be a real problem of kfiya. So by making this law where the husband, he won't even say he's recalcitrant, he will give the get, but he's giving the get because of the fear that it's going to cost him. That is considered kfiyas haget.
So how would we be machshir any get in New York State? It should always be a suffix mamza.
It's very difficult for me to answer your question. Rabbi David Bleich, I remember at that time, he was very much afraid of it. It's problematic. The Paiskim, who were very much against it after this law was passed, don't speak up about giving a get in New York State because of the ability of the woman to coerce it. But it is problematic. Some tshuvas will have to be written if someone wants to bring it up. Perhaps, again, there is a rove. Rove husbands who give a get don't give it because they're afraid they're going to lose money. They really want out. They want to remarry themselves. So perhaps because of this great rove, we don't say that a get is a get miyusa. Perhaps that's a reason, but it is a problem. Rav David Bleich was very much afraid of this kind of chashash.
In the book we published, Headlines, we had a possible way to use the New York get law to help a Beis Din. And it was based on the Tashbat says that Tashbat says that if the Isha steals money from the husband and says, I'll give you back the money if you give me a get, the halacha has a din of kfiya. What would be the halacha, we declared, if the husband had money in a safe and she changed the combination and she said, I'm not giving you your combination unless you give me a get?
The real question would be, is she called a gazlan by doing that? Is that called gezel? That would be the question, because what the Tashbats meant, if she's stealing his money, so it's coercion. In this situation, if we would consider her a crook, what is it, a grum or whatever it is, we would have to, if she's not a crook, then she's helping him, giving, she's not a crook, so she's saying, I'll help you get back your aveda. If you give me a get, that would probably not be kfiya. Again, you have to write a response on that specific situation. But the criteria would be, is she a crook or not?
So her would be grama bin Azakin, right? I mean, she's saying harishal chalafanecha.
Yeah, but grama bin Azakin, according to the Miri, is a gazlan if he doesn't pay it back. Although the Gemara says, chayiv b'dinah shemayim, and it's not clear whether we can apply that Miriam Bavakama on Kama ben Zaken to all the other lots of the Shemaim, like Kumal Med Rabmine, like Ribbis.
But it's even less than Grama because she's saying Harei Shal Chala Fanecha. So it's even less than Grama.
Perhaps, but if it would be Grama, well, perhaps it'll be Garmi, which is worse because she's doing an act where he can't get to his money. Maybe it's like Side of Shtereiser. I don't know.
But the money's here.
It's here, but not there.
I'm saying it's like she took away his access.
He has no access. Yeah. So if she's not called a Goslin, there would be room that it's a kosher again.
And there's Rayas in the Paiskim that, Lamashal, every time you do Harchakis Rabbeinu Tam, you say, Shalai Lisa Valita Nimai. She would hire 100 guys to stand outside his store and say, do not shop here. Rabbeinu Tam says...
Which we do.
So Rabbeinu Tam says that doesn't have a din of kfiya by get.
No, because it's done al pidin. So it's called kviyas, but first you have to know.
But it's in a case where ein kaifin. Rabbi Natam is even in a case where ein kaifin.
So that's not kviyah.
Right. But so if she stops access to his store, have a din of kviyah.
Is that called changing the combination? That's the question. But that what is what the tzibah does. The real problem with Rabbi Natam is who's right. Who says maybe he's right. You have to find out what it is. Is it always that a recalcitrant husband is always the Russia? We just said there may be situations where she's doing things. He's a quiet, nice, wonderful person, and she has done things that cause him a tremendous hefzeit, and she stole from him, and he simply wants back the money and he'll give a get, which incidentally I know of such occurrences. So you're not right away going to pask, and he said, well, Kasten, husband, Rabbi Natam will throw the book at him. All these things need some sort of investigation. And many a time when we try to get Rabbanim involved in pressuring a person to give a get, many of them said, I don't know who's right or wrong. I don't want to get involved, which I didn't like. You have to get involved. But therefore, let me alone. So don't call me and forget about me. That's not correct, because people must get involved or else she'll remain in Aguna.
So but
you have to make a judgment first.
There are four other etzes that are being bandied about by different rabbanim. I'd like to comment. I mean, they all have, some are t'nai b'kiddushin. It's based on the Ramah by Nafla Lefnei Yavam. So he says you can make Kiddushin al Tanai. What does the Rav think of those etzes?
There is a literature on this. In fact, close to 100 years ago, there was a conservative rabbi who knew how to learn, which was very lashchir. But in that time, at the beginning of conservative Judaism, there were a few. And he wrote a whole sefer on Tanai b'Kiddushin. And there were responses from Orthodox Rabbanim. That Kufa, there were many Gedolim that responded to it. I have the sefer in my attic. And it's a very, very difficult thing. Many were against any kind of Tanai b'Kiddushin because ain't it my sibilah sibilah's nose? And it would change the whole concept of marriage in halacha. They were very much against this. They felt it was playing with fire. So it's hard to accept it, l'alacha l'maisa. Very difficult.
And obviously, hafgas kiddushin, the solution.
That's the rivash in certain places. I mean, again, what it would do to our generation is it would bring about such a kalos in kiddushin that one could think that, although it is a great problem, aguna, but it would bring a change in the whole way people look at marriage. In halachic marriage, that's something that I don't think our generation can handle. Yes, there were tkufas in places where they did that, but what can I say? I don't think we can handle it. I don't think the generation can handle this kind of situation. Unfortunately, there were those people. I certainly don't want to mention names or anything, but there's no doubt in my mind that there were people who have utilized this concept in such a way where they did, they called it heterim. There was a woman, for a short while, she had an aguna organization. I didn't think much of it because the organization, whatever it was that the whatever the woman said, that was what they accepted, and they started to pressure. I know because of a situation where the husband was totally right, and he wanted to give a get, and the woman told lies, so she went to that organization. And I called him, but you didn't even hear. The husband was ready to give a get. She was the one who was recalcitrant. But she just wanted to make bad publicity or whatever, or pressure. She couldn't answer me. But I knew the facts. So this woman would promulgate the following. The Mishnah in Kedushin says a woman is an Eishes Ish unless there's get or Mises Habal. She said there's a third thing. It's called heter. You know what I mean? People got different concepts of what the holiness of Kedushas Yisrael and Kedushin in Kedushas Yisrael is as a result of this kind of attitude. Well, so in the long run, this is Negea to all of Klal Yisrael. If it changes an attitude of what Kedushin is, the pain may be the pain. I meant the chesaron of the proper approach to Kedushin may be something to most of Klal Yisrael, may be something where one should think twice about the Aguna problem. Was it worth it to change the whole structure and attitude of what Kedushin is? But things like that, attitudes like this, do that.
So, in closing, the only solution that would appear to be is so we don't have a cure, but we do maybe have a vaccine, which would be the prenuptial. Do you think, well, we do maybe have a cure, which would be the Rabbanim coming together. Do you think that at maybe an Agudah convention, besides the usual most wonderful issues they discuss, perhaps they should say we should put together an amalgamation of Rabbanim, that when we have an Aguna, we could sit together and they should have some expeditious way to come out and say, so-and-so, whether he's right or she's right, they've been separated, it's over, she's willing to give visitation, we really don't care who's right, it's been 2 years, so-and-so is mechuyev to give a get, and if he doesn't want to give a get, le'lisa v'lita nimai, le'lamal is b'nai, etc. Do you think that would be a worthy cause for an organization, which Agud is a Haredi organization in America?
If they are good, they would get together with the U, because after all, the U represents what we call modern Orthodox, and make sure that there is enough Hasidic representation in that group. I don't know.
That's really a struggle.
That's what I mean. That's really a great problem. I certainly think it's an idea. I have another suggestion, but I'm afraid you'll laugh at it, but I'll tell you anyway. We're close, so I can tell it to you. The Makor is in Chumash. When Yisrael gave advice to Moshe Rabbeinu, because Naval Tibail all day long, you just can't sit at a din Torah and do what you're doing. The way the Ramban learns, Yisrael said, you can't handle this, I see what you're doing. So Moshe Rabbeinu told him, I'm doing three things. I'm spal for them when they're sick, and I teach them Torah. And then when there's a din Torah, I handle the din Torah. It seems Yisrael couldn't criticize on the first two things. There's nobody else. There's no replacement for Tfilas Moshe. Go to somebody else. Or Moshe Rabbeinu teaching Torah. But the third thing he says, in the Dine Torah you can delegate. Set up a judiciary, you'll delegate. And then there's a pasuk where it seems that to be a non sequitur. Where does that come out? That v'reisun es haderech ha'shal yelchu bo v'samayis ha'shal yasun, etc. And the Gemara b'Metzia Daf Lamed says, well, teach him gemilas chasodim. And the Ramban in Sefer HaMitzvahs, in the first Sheirish, there are really distinctions between two mitzvahs in Tayag. One is v'alachta b'drachav and one is v'aftalecha k'meicha. Here it's interesting that as haderech hasheyel chubo, he meant that. And the Ramban explains, if first one of the things is beis chayeyim, teach them how to make a living so they won't quibble, they won't be such machlekes, and there won't be a great yetzahara for gezel, because people will know how to make a living. Teach them gemilas chasadim, to be kind to one another, etc. If people will relate to one another as friends, as they should be, as yidden should be, then we're getting to the root causes. A friend of mine, Rav Naftali Richter, about, must have been 60 years ago, once said something in etymology, which I think is a Dvar Emes. The Gemara says, Yisrael arachmanim, baishanim, gaimwe chasadim. Yidn arachmanim. So what's the word for someone who's very mean? An achzar. Achzar. He must be a stranger. He can't be a yid. We're achmanim. I believe this is true pshat in what the word means. So when we want to really battle for the root causes of how a person can be so mean, such an achzar, there is such a thing in our educational system. And I know that in our educational system, girls are taught this. A great deal of the limudim with girls are in inyanei hashkafa and also in inyanei gemilas chasadim. That's part of what the education is. It's in the structure, it's in the system. Our system, and look, we want that echad sheyetzeh lahira. I'm not saying that we should obliterate our total system, but I think that part of educational system is should be something to be ma'ir rachmanis. We are rachmanim. I think Rabbi Elia Lapian said so, used to feed a cat, which is, you know, why? Because it's ma'ir rachmanis and gemilas chasadim when you do good things, even to an animal. And there's a makkah with Rabbi Yehudah Anasi, that's how he redeemed himself from all the pain, because he said that the maid shouldn't sweep away the cat that was there. So this whole educational system, as far as our boys are concerned, a lot of thought has to be given to instill the midah of rachmanis, and more than anything, the idea of derech hasheyelchu boy, which the Rambam explains to be mizdamet HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he's a rachman and a goymul chesed. This is what we have to do as far as root causes are concerned. I know it's a bit of a dream, but I think that as far as what we of doing is concerned, this is part of the doing. So there won't be achzarim, there won't be achzarim, there won't be a recalcitrant husband. It's not exactly shooting straight at the target, but it's so that you don't have to shoot later on, perhaps. That was what I was thinking about when you told me I should comment about agunas. Go to the root causes, there shouldn't be any achzarim.
Thank you very much. That was Moreinu Agoyin, Rav David Cohn of Gvul Yaivitz. Thank you very much, Rav David.
Thank you for inviting me, Kultiv.
So Rav David said that basically it's about midas. We have to teach midas. And he said halachically, the only solution he really knows is a prenuptial agreement. So we have on the line with us Rav Yonah Ries. He's the Av Bezdin of the RCA of Chicago. Welcome, Rabbi Ries.
Thank you very much. Good vach to you.
Good vach. Rabbi Ries, could you please describe to the Olam how the RCA prenuptial works, being that the RCA is the main espouser and proponent of this prenuptial? Explain the mechanics of it.
Well, the prenuptial agreement, which is promulgated by the Beit Din of America, which is affiliated with the RCA, really has two essential components. The first component is an arbitration clause, which stipulates that in the event that the husband and the wife will ever have a dispute regarding a possible divorce and the issue of the get, then they will submit that dispute to a specified Beit Din, and that Beit Din will have jurisdiction to issue a decision. And the parties will abide by the decision of the Beit Din. It gives the Beit Din the authority to render a decision, to even incorporate monetary elements into that decision based on the ksuva, based on the tanoim, based on the prenuptial agreement itself. So it has the force of both halacha and of a secular law, which would recognize the decision of the Beit Din as a binding decision. So it would have a kiyum of shoftim v'shotrim titen lecha. You'd have the shoftim in the form of the Beit Din and the shotrim in terms of the civil court that would enforce the decision of the Beit Din. The second component of the prenuptial agreement is a monetary support obligation that the husband takes upon himself in the event that the couple ever becomes separated and they're not living together as husband and wife in the same residence, then the husband, who has a support mizonos obligation towards his wife anyway, which normally doesn't need to be quantified because when a couple is living together, somehow the bills get paid, the food is provided, the mortgage is rendered every month, and the clothing is purchased and so forth. But in the event of separation, the amount has to be quantified. So the husband takes upon himself an amount of support of $150 a day, typically, which is tied in to the standard cost of living. It's not a penalty obligation, it's a support obligation. And he takes it upon himself to pay that support obligation every single day for as long as the couple remains married according to Jewish law, unless the Beit Din, when it would hear a case brought by either party pursuant to the arbitration clause, would decide that for whatever reason that amount no longer needed to be payable. So that also provides for a very powerful incentive for a husband to give a get as quickly as possible when it's clear that a marriage is over, so he won't have to pay that quantified support obligation every single day for the rest of his life. So those are the two essential components of the prenuptial agreement. More and more couples have been signing this agreement since it seems to work pretty well, and it has the endorsement of many leading halakhic authorities.
Well, what are the statistics? Do you have statistics on it? Does it really help?
Based on my own just empirical data of cases that I have dealt with both at the Beit Din of America and at the Chicago Rabbinical Council, my own observation is that in 100% of the cases in which a valid halachic prenuptial agreement was duly executed by the parties, a get was given in a prompt fashion.
So why hasn't it been more widely accepted by, call it, the Hasidisha or the Rosh Yeshivas of the Yeshivish world? Why hasn't it sort of grabbed hold?
It's difficult to say. I think that there's always a mindset of Echad Hashem in the Torah, that if something wasn't always done and wasn't always exercised, it's viewed with suspicion or hesitation. On some level, it's appropriate, meaning that if you're going to introduce something that hasn't been done, you want to make sure that it is halachically airtight, that it is endorsed by Gedolim, therefore it takes time for various communities to reach that comfort level. But as the number of endorsements continues to grow, and the usage of the agreement has proven itself to be effective, I think that there is an increase in the recognition and in the utilization of the agreement, which is a healthy indication that this is one particular innovation that is proper. Not only that, but perhaps one of the reasons why it's being recognized more and more as proper is because it's also being recognized that it's not such an innovation. The form of the agreement itself is based on Hanusach of Tanayim Achronim from the Nachla Shiva of over 300 years ago, which itself was based on Takana Shum, which has stated explicitly that in the event that there will be a kitata between a married couple, that the husband would take upon himself a certain support obligation every single day until such time as they would appear before the Beis Din, and the Beis Din would sort out what the future of the marriage of that couple would be. And the notion of agreeing to submit before a Beis Din is certainly not a new notion. This dates back to the early origins of our Beis Din system and the halacha of the Eila Mishpatim Asher Tassim Lifnei. That whenever there is a dispute, whether it's a business dispute or even if it's a dispute between a husband and a wife, that they're supposed to appear before Beis Din.
Oh, but Rabbi Reese, there's a significant difference in, let's say, the Nachlas Shiva's Tanayim and the current arbitration is that in the current form, in that the Nachlas Shiva discusses, he says they would submit to a particular Beis Din, and he would be mechayiv himself in support and mezainis, and then he said, and immediately afterwards, she would return home back to the husband, and they would live happily ever after. So, arguably, the Nachlas Shiva's agreement was meant to be a means to support the woman while they were working out an argument or a disagreement, rather than as a precursor to divorce, whereas the prenuptial we're discussing is more of a portender of a future divorce. And that's
course,
a significant difference.
Of course. And Rav Asher Weiss, who is given a haskama to the prenuptial agreement, notes that distinction. But, Hagave Atzmacha, that do you think that in every single case throughout history, when a Jewish couple was separated and they came back to Beis Din, that they always lived happily ever after? If so, the entire institution of Gittin would have only arisen within this past century, but that's not the case. There have been Gittin from time immemorial. We have an entire Maseches Gittin that wasn't merely theoretical. It's always a possibility that when they come to Beis Din, they're not going to live b'shalom b'shalva. Nonetheless, the support obligation was still in effect until such time as they would appear before Beis Din. Naturally, it's the intention and the hope and the expectation and the aspiration that every single marriage will work out. That's still our aspiration, to try to facilitate shalom bayis. But we recognize that it's not always possible. It's not even always healthy. It's not always the end result.
So let me ask you halachically a possible problem with the prenuptial, and that is that the Shulchan Aruch brings the Rajba, that is a chumra, but the Ramah brings it, and we are mostly of Ashkenazic descent, and that is that if the husband agrees to a penalty or any monetary damages if he doesn't consummate the divorce, it creates a problem with the get. So the Nesivis comments, he says, I have a way, a solution. And the solution is, rather than penalize the husband for not giving a get, let's make staying married extremely expensive him, or costly. And what is that? That the husband forgoes on any of the obligations that the wife would have towards the marriage, while at the same time, the husband agrees to continue to support her in the way that he had prior to the separation. So he says, in effect, you're creating a situation where the marriage is untenable because he's basically paying the bills and receiving none of the goods. And that, in effect, would cause him to divorce his wife, which is, I believe, would be the precursor for the RCA prenuptial. Am I correct?
Well, all of this are features that provide for the halachic basis for the obligations that are contained in agreement, meaning that once you have a mizonos obligation, there's always the possibility of the mizonos obligation being offset by the halacha that the mizonos are tit for tat with the maisa yodea of the isha. So the husband's not receiving the maisa yodea. On what basis does he then still have this ongoing obligation for mizonos? So So part and parcel of the obligation is precisely this feature that you mentioned, that the husband has the ability to waive the ma'aseh yadeh of his wife while at the same time continuing to obligate himself in the mizonos obligation, which is not a knas, it's not a penalty, and therefore doesn't run afoul of the consideration of the Rashba, that the knas atzmo could be potentially problematic, although, as you noted, the Rama himself, paskins that b'dieved, knas atzmo would not invalidate a get, but nonetheless, we certainly try to be machmir, at least a chatchiva, when it comes to such an issue. So therefore, as long as it's not a knas, it's just a husband undertaking to support his wife, the husband can at the same time waive any rights that he would be entitled to so that his obligation would remain in effect, not be a knas, and still provide for an incentive in appropriate cases for a get to be given.
So the nesiv is based on that, says that since you're not doing it tit for tat, he says you're not mentioning that you're doing it in exchange for the divorce. You're just doing it in a way that the marriage is now expensive for the husband and doesn't bear much benefit for him. In effect, you're creating a situation where he has a reason to want to give a get. By the way, the Mishkan Isyankiv, the Pesachei Tshuva brings the Mishkan Isyankiv, says that the Rama would be b'diyeved, but that's a sidebar. But I have
Mishkan
a question.
Osyaikov, the Pesachei Tshuva, of course, yeah. The Mishkan Osyaikov is not being so crazy about the Rama, but others again saying that maybe it's not even a machlokis harishonim, that everyone would agree it's a problem, and others say no, everybody agrees it's not a problem. So it goes back right. And forth. But the Maaser, the Rama, is Meiko B'Shas Sadchak, so that's something that certainly deserves, you know, a certain threshold of credibility. But as you've noted and as I've acknowledged as well, this is not designed as a knas altogether. You would really only have the problem of the Rama and the Rashba. It was designed as a knas, but it's not designed as a knas. This is explicitly noted in the Torah's Gittin, which is quoted by the Pesachei Tshuva as well. You have this type of an arrangement that we have in the prenuptial agreement. It's not really a knas at all.
So here's a possible problem with the Torah's Gittin, and that is that the Shulchan Aruch and Reish Hei to Beis Yosef discusses an interesting case. He says where you had a marauding band of thieves that takes a man hostage and says basically we're going to kill you, and the man says okay. It's called Xeris HaSagrikin, and he says, I'll give you my field so that I can live. And then subsequently, he gives the field over, and this man subsequently sells it to somebody else. So there's in a case of Sagrikin, in such a case, the second seller would have actually, it would belong to him, and we could see that the marauder actually owned the field. So the Beis Yosef asks the question, he says, how can that be? He says, this in effect is Tlu V'yayev. He says, there was no value given when the marauder got the field, so why doesn't this have a din of Tluvi Yahiv? There was no consideration, and therefore any subsequent purchaser, in effect, would not have that entity, would not own it. So the Beis Yosef says, you know why? He says, I'll tell you a chiddush. He says, because when this man asked for when the marauder said, your money, I'm going to kill you, he didn't really ask for the field. It was understood maybe that he wanted the field, but he didn't ask for the field. He said, I'm going to kill you. So this guy then voluntarily gave the field up to save his own life. So he says, in such a case where there wasn't a demand for that object, we do not see that it's considered an onus on the field. It was an onus on his life, and he paid him off from a side from the field, and therefore the kinyan is chal. But he notes himself that the Rashba argues on this, and the Rashba says that even a derivative, you look to the bottom of the claim. When somebody comes and he says, I'm going to kill you, he's really saying, I want your money. You look through the flim-flam, even though it hasn't been said. Now, if we to take this Rashba lahalacha, in a case where every prenuptial that's being signed by the RCA, we know it's for the purpose of when there is a disagreement of a get. So even though the Torah's Gittin says, you never said the word get, according to the Rajba, it doesn't matter whether you said the word get, but you see through it and you look at the underlying intent. And if the underlying intent is in effect to effectuate this transaction, he says it would be called an inus. So according to that Rajba, wouldn't the Torah's Gittin's logic then be disavowed, in effect ineffectual?
Absolutely not. In my humble opinion, there's an obvious distinction between two cases. In the case of the Sikrikin, there's mamish and onus. The person is putting a gun to the fellow's head. The person has a gun to his head, so he's under an onus. So when he gives up the field, it's based on a situation of duress. In the case of the prenuptial agreement, there's no onus. There's no gun to the head. There's no duress which is being exercised whatsoever. It's simply the husband taking upon himself a mizonos obligation, which is consistent with his halakhic obligations anyway. And if, as a result of the fact that he's taken on a mizonos obligation, which is a proper thing to do towards his wife, he decides that since they're not living together and the marriage is no longer functional, it makes more sense for him to give a get rather than to pay mizonos to a wife that he's not together with for the rest of his life. So that is a very much beratzon, voluntary, free will type of determination, which is not being made under any duress whatsoever. It's just a sensible thing to do.
Now, those who are there, is there any halachic based opposition, or is it just at this point cultural?
I don't think that there are halachic objections that anybody deems insurmountable. There were a few concerns that have been expressed over time, which are legitimate concerns that, you know, obviously we have to be, you know, mindful about and sensitive about. You know, when Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote his Truven Chelik Dalid of Eben Ezer Simen Kuf Zayin, he writes that it's a good idea, in his opinion, to have prenuptial agreements with respect to the arbitration clause. He was asked, you know, specifically about having an arbitration clause that says the couples will submit to a specific bezdin, and they will, if the bezdin rules that the husband should give a get, the husband will give a get. They rule that the wife will accept the get, the wife agrees she'll accept the get. So Moshe has a little bit of a footnote to that decision with the two or three different nuschos and different printings of Moshe, interestingly enough. But the gist of that footnote is that it has to be explained in such a way that it's not going to cause friction at the onset of the marriage, that at the very inception of the marriage, you don't want to put a germ of an idea into a couple's head that if they weren't thinking of divorce, they should think of divorce now. I think this has become less of a concern as the prenuptial agreement has become more standardized, so entering into it is becoming for many couples similar to just entering into the ketubah, which even though it mentions or is premised upon the possibility of death or divorce, that doesn't in any way diminish the simcha at the inception of the marriage. Secondly, and this is sort of an unfortunate reality of our society, divorce has become more of the public part of the public consciousness. So that when a couple gets married, if you mention to them the possibility of divorce, it wouldn't be the first time that they've heard of such a concept, or the first time that they have become aware that there's such a thing as couples who get divorced. From a very young age, people go to school, go to yeshiva, and they see that there are children whose parents are not together. It's a sad thing, but it's the reality. And therefore, it's not a shock and not something which they haven't already internalized in their minds. And nonetheless, they're able to approach marriage with a healthy and happy mindset, that the expectation is that this marriage is going to last. There are other concerns that if you're going to have somebody sign a document, you should make sure that he understands what he's signing. Halacha and Choshen Mishpat, that once you sign a document, it's assumed that you understood what you were signing. But nonetheless, if something is just placed in front of somebody at the last minute, there's a little bit of a concern. Maybe it won't be read carefully enough. So this can also be addressed by making sure that the agreement is spelled out. It's explained. I, myself, I'm inside the Kiddushin, and I have the couple sign a prenuptial agreement. I have them come to my office weeks in advance so that it can be spelled out and explained, and they can read it carefully and understand what exactly is being signed and what's being entered into. So these are all different considerations that have to be taken seriously. But as I mentioned, they're not insurmountable, and over time, I think that they become more and more responsibly addressed.
So we want to thank Rabbi Yonah Riess for taking such a sensitive issue and being a leading proponent of it. Certainly, anybody who's worked with Agunis knows the terrible tsar that this causes, not only to themselves, but to the children, to the families, and sadly, to Klal Yisrael itself, as we've seen in the papers recently when we have Rabbanim who try to help. So we'd like to thank him for being a Nachshon Ben Aminadav and being such a source of strength in an area that needs tikkun. Thank you very much, Rabbi Riess.
It's my pleasure, and a good tovach.
Welcome to Headlines, Halakhic Debate of Current Events, a weekly interactive program on some of the most controversial breaking issues of today. Here now is your host, David Lichtenstein, founder and CEO of the Lightstone Group and author of Headlines. Thank you for listening to Headlines, Halakhic Debates of Current Events. Thank you for listening to Headlines, Halakhic Debates of Current Events with David Lichtenstein, founder and CEO of the Lightstone Group and author of Headlines. Please join us again next week for another edition of Headlines.
We're sitting here with Mireinu Harav HaGoyin, Reb David Cohen of Gvul.
We will have with us Rabbi Lander, and he will be speaking with us technology and Hilchos Shabbos. I want to thank you all very much for joining us, and excuse us for a few of our technical problems that we've been having, but we're sort of beginners at this, and we hope to work it out over the next coming shows. Thank you very much, and have a wonderful week.